भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद्भागवतम फिफ्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 11 टेक्स्ट 7। तावानयं व्यवहारः सदावी क्षेत्रज्ञ साक्ष्यो भवति स्थूल सूक्ष्म तस्मान् मनोलिंगमदो वदन्ति गुणागुणत्वस्य परावरस्य। Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: the mind makes the living entity within this material world wander through different species of life, and thus the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being, demigod, fat person, skinny person, and so forth. Learned scholars say that bodily appearance, bondage, and liberation are caused by the mind. Purport: just as the mind is a cause of bondage, it can also be the cause of liberation. The mind is described here as para avara. Para means transcendental and avara means material. When the mind is engaged in the Lord's service, savai mana krishna padaravindayor, it is called para, transcendental. When the mind is engaged in material sense gratification, it is called avara or material. At the present moment, in our conditioned state, our mind is fully absorbed in material sense gratification. But it can be purified and brought to its original Krishna consciousness by the process of devotional service. We have often given the example of Ambarish Maharaj. Savai mana krishna padaravindayor vachamsi vaikunta gunanu varnane. The mind must be controlled in Krishna consciousness. The tongue can be utilized to spread the message of Krishna and glorify the Lord or take prasad, the remnants of food offered to Krishna. Sevon mukhehi jivvado. When one utilizes the tongue in the service of the Lord, the other senses can become purified. As stated in the Narad Pancharatra, sarvopadhi vinirmuktam tatparatve nanirmalam. When the mind and senses are purified, one's total existence is purified and one's designations are also purified. One no longer considers himself a human being, a demigod, a cat, dog, Hindu, Muslim, and so forth. When the senses and mind are purified and one is fully engaged in Krishna's service, one can be liberated and return home, back to Godhead. Tavan ayam vyavahara sadavi kshetragya sakshyo bhavati sthula sukshma tasman manolingam ado vadanti गुणागुणत्वस्य परावरस्य। जड भरत नाउ टेकिंग द पोस्ट ऑफ ए स्पिरिचुअल मास्टर इज टॉकिंग टू द किंग एंड द स्पेसिफिक क्वालिफिकेशन ऑफ ए गुड टीचर इज दैट he comes to the level of the student, understands his specific query, specific question, and gives him answers which address his problem. Now, it is not always the case that the student is ready for everything what the teacher can give. Many times the student has his own mental reservations. This is exactly like the battlefield of Kurukshetra, where Arjuna had some questions in his mind and Lord Krishna, he took the position of a spiritual teacher only when Arjuna requested. Till that time, Arjuna was treating Krishna as his friend and Krishna was responding as a friend. The gist or the essence of Arjuna's problem was, okay, I know I am going to do my duty, but my duty is telling me to kill somebody I love so much, my own guru, my own grandfather. And I am a person who will do my duty, but this is something which I never imagined. Please help me. So Krishna, he takes this discussion to the level of what he wanted, spirit soul. And initially he says, Arjuna, you fight for the war, for the cause of getting a kingdom. Once you get the kingdom, you'll be happy. That is like today's businessmen, if they are told, just earn money for the sake of money. Once you know your profits have increased, you'll be happy. And many fall for it. Or a student who feels, I'll just pass this exam, I'll be happy. For whatever in life, if we say, I'll just get that and I'll be happy. And when we get it, we find, it's not exactly what I had imagined. I thought by getting this post, this object, tasting this item, going to this place, I'll be happy. But now I know something more is also required. So Arjuna refuses to go by that line. And he says, no. What to speak of this kingdom, Krishna? Even if I get an unrivaled kingdom, that means here at least there is Duryodhan, Dushasan, Karna, Shakuni, I have my rivals. If I get a kingdom which is 100,000 times better than this kingdom, like the planet of demigods and without any enemies, there is a bigger war going on in my mind. Who can give me transcendental knowledge? And then Krishna starts telling him about the soul, the migration of the soul, transmigration of the soul. But everything connected to the battlefield. In fact, even Krishna's definition of a soul, na jayate mriyate va kadachin, nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuya, ajo nitya shashvatoyam purano, na hanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul is not killed, then it is not burned by any astra, it cannot be withered by the wind, it cannot be wetted by water. Now there is a reason why Krishna gives these examples, because these are all weapons which Arjuna had. He had a wind weapon, he had a water weapon, he had a stone weapon, he could create a mountain if necessary. So for a warrior, dealing with bows, arrows, astra, shastra and death, that's how the example is given. Similarly here, Rahugana, he had accused Jadabharat that you fat fellow, you know, you can't hold a palanquin properly. So he also begins the discourse by telling that it is the mind which makes the living entity wander through different species of life, and therefore the living entity experiences mundane affairs in different forms as a human being, demigod, fat person, skinny person, and so forth. So as I said, this is good teachers. They always come down to the level of their student. And then they carry the student to the level which they want him to go. Because most of the time, their expectations do not match or need not match. A student may feel, just let me get this over with this lesson. But a teacher may want the student to understand the import the real meaning behind that lesson. In our folk tales in India, there's a story of an ashram where the guru always gives the students lessons that God is everywhere. God is everywhere. And one day, to test their understanding, whether how much is this thing sunk in, he gives all the students a banana and tells them that this is our ashram, there is a forest nearby, there is a river flowing nearby. Each of you take this banana and eat in a place where nobody can see you. So, after 1 hour, when they come back, everybody is told. And some of them are so simple, they say, well, I tried to go somewhere, but then there are some cows, there are some birds. And very few of them said, well, I went to one mountain and I saw a cave. I checked and double checked, there was nobody there. And then I ate the banana. Only one comes back with the banana intact. And the guru says, what happened? In this whole area, you cannot find a single corner where you can eat it. He said, you told me God is everywhere. God watches through various energies. So I was just trying to meditate as to, is God not here? Can God not see this? So I just failed. So he failed in the given task, but he succeeded in understanding the real lesson. So many times, success and failure just doesn't depend on the kind of answers you write in the exam. More of it, or most of it, depends upon how we live our life. For example, Arjun, when his son died, he started crying. So Bhagavad Gita understanding doesn't make a person stone-hearted. When they told that Krishna, your son is dead. Arjuna, your son is dead. He didn't say, oh, he's not his body, he's spirit soul. So what? In fact, Arjun had, he was discussing with his wife, Subhadra. He's a warrior. Now, what kind of topics will interest him? War, strategies, phalanxes, army formations. And he is telling this to his wife. When Abhimanyu was in her womb, and he says that, today I will discuss about the chakra viewer. There are 7 formations and there are various pressure points needed to get into it. And the entry points are not the same as the exit points. Now just imagine such intricate Dhanurvidya subject matter, and Arjuna very nicely describing this to his wife, and poor lady, she's already carrying Abhimanyu in her womb. As she's hearing the explanation of the 7th entry point, she just dozes off to sleep. But the fact is that Abhimanyu is such a remarkable person. In the womb of his mother, he has already mastered the art of entering this viewha. Previously, the battle would be a very intricately planned affair. For example, the Mahabharata describes, if one army makes a Ardha Chandra viewha, that means the whole army is arranged like this, like a half moon, then the opposite army, immediately after seeing that formation, now they have their choice what to do. Sometimes they would take the needle formation, that means a very thin line of maybe 4 soldiers, long, mile long, and then they would go and pierce that half moon. So there are positions and counter positions and all of them are described. But chakra viewer was the most formidable. It contained 7 circles, each one becoming more and more thicker than the outer one. So Abhimanyu already knew how to enter that. But because his mother dozed off, he doesn't know how to get out of it. He didn't know that. So when Arjuna was not available that day, and the Pandavas were saying that something has to be done, these Maharathis have deployed the Chakravyuha here, Abhimanyu said, I can go inside. But once I go inside and I make their position weak, someone has to follow behind me. Otherwise, I don't know how to get out of it. And then the Pandava warrior said, okay, we'll try to follow you. Don't worry. So they kept up. But then Bhishmadev, Karna, Jayadrath, Shalya and all these mighty, mighty warriors, they have full experience of how to get in, get out. But for a 16-year-old boy, it was not possible. But still, within the last circle, Abhimanyu was making life miserable for them. And finally they said, look, hell with those rules. Nobody is seeing us now here. Unless we all attack him now, this one boy can kill us all. So that was the fatal point where they just discarded the main rule which they agreed. So five people attacking Abhimanyu at one point of time. Poor boy, he lost his sword, lost his shield, lost his armor, and finally he lay dead. So when Arjuna heard this, he started grieving like anything. He started, almost he lost his composure. Same position which he was when the Bhagavad Gita started. So what difference does the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita make in us if we are going to lament in the same way? Normally, people say that if someone leaves us, someone leaves a body, a near dear relative, in West they say, okay, you will get over with it. Time will heal. But then we find Narottam Das Thakur, he is saying, in separation from my dear associates of the Lord, I feel like crashing my head on a stone. Pashane kutibo matha. Now, is this similar? Or devotees should not lament? Or devotees should lament? Or what exactly should we do? If we lament, then what is the use of this philosophy? And if we should not lament, then what do we do? Should we just artificially make ourselves, our hearts hard? And is that what we should do for eternity? That means here is a place where we can exchange emotions, and after a long struggle for liberation, you go to a place where we are all just like stones? No. That's not what is meant by real liberation. Let us try to understand this step by step. First and foremost, it is the mind which makes the living entity wander within this world through different species of life. If this understanding is clear, that there is only one and only one cause for our wandering, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was speaking to Rupa Goswami, he used the word Brahmanda Bhramite. Brahmanda Bhramite Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Paye Bhakti Lata Bij. Srila Prabhupada explains that Brahmanda doesn't mean just one universe. Brahmanda may mean a cluster of many, many millions of universes with millions and millions of planets, with billions and trillions of living entities. Now, in today's times doesn't mean today's morning newspaper, in today's reality as we see it, but most of us see our, just like, you know, these pictures, Prabhupada called them windows to the spiritual world. Every time you pick up your morning newspaper, that is your window to the material world. You may see the Italian marble or the teak wood and you may say, well, this is material, you know. And suddenly your eyes get transfixed on Krishna and Balram tending the cows, and there is greenery, and there are some houses, and there is Yamuna flowing, there are birds. In fact, a few days ago, one devotee related a small interaction with Srila Prabhupada early in the Brooklyn temple. That devotees were seeing a painting which Prabhupada had commissioned, and Prabhupada said, see this one cow, she's crying. A tear has come from one of her eyes. And devotees were looking at it, but not so intently. And Prabhupada said, you know why? Because Krishna, in that picture, is carrying a calf. Baby calf, which any one of you has seen that, you always feel like cuddling it, carrying it. And Prabhupada said, that is her calf. And she's so happy that, oh, Krishna has chosen to carry my calf. The calf is blissful, the mother is blissful. And devotees were wonderstruck that they didn't see that in that picture. So actually, Prabhupada would see these paintings and would see more. He would, as if that painting was like a moving thing, you know, just like now we have some prints on a computer, click and the flash movie starts. So Prabhupada's eyes would be that double click. You see that and that window is revealed. Something very perverted happens to us when we open our window to the material world. One devotee calls the newspaper Kali Puran. Early morning you read your Kali Puran. So what happens is suddenly we are absorbed in various issues. So many things are ready to pounce upon our mind and give it a color. You may see, oh, I am from this community and somebody from this community was shot dead. I am from this nation and this nation won this championship. I am from this place and there's a bomb explosion there. So many things. And sometimes we find people laughing, smiling, or very disappointed, very dejected. How do they get these expressions? By just reading something. It's not that just because somebody won a medal that you are suddenly happy. There is identification. That is the goal of Maya. Identification. To identify you with something over here. And identification, it's like every object in this material world. You know, sometimes the police, they have a handcuff. Police are also in handcuffs, you know that? But only one. And the other one they put on the criminal so that fellow won't leave. Have you seen that anytime? Otherwise, if both are in his hands, he may also run away. So they put one there. So similarly, every object in this material world has already one cuff there and one is waiting for us. The moment we go and identify, click, and then we can't move because we already have identified. And then we say, oh, now I am so attached, now I can't move. Now either this thing will come with me or I will stay here. It can be anything. And the desire to stay here, that is the beginning of everything else. Just one small thing, a desire to stay here. Out of curiosity, out of compulsion, out of interest, can be anything. And therefore, these different forms as described by Jadabharat, maybe a demigod, sometimes a fat person, a skinny person, just see, this information is here. And we claim that, at least people outside claim that we are living in a very advanced time. And especially these health clinics, they can make a fat person to skinny person, or skinny into fat, gain/lose weight. Please call on this mobile.
What does it mean? It means basically people are not satisfied with the way they are. Now, how do you become skinny? Well, I was born skinny. That means it's not my problem. It's not my fault. Who made you fat? Well, McDonald's. I ate their food. So it's they are to be blamed. Why I'm born skinny? They, my parents. Why I became fat? These shops. They put so much into something into that food. What about me? My desire. It's not true that my parents chose me. Most of the time, I choose my parents. Not by the name, of course, but by my desires. Karmana daiva netrena jantur devapattaya striya pravishta udaram purusho reta kanashrayaha. Karmana, your activities are the main component. Daiva netrena, somebody is supervising from above. Jantu is the living entity. His body starts developing, or the decision what body should be given to him is taken under the influence of your karma by Daiva Netrena, higher authorities. Striya Pravishta Udaram, that makes you enter in the womb of a mother, taking the shelter of the semen of the father. So, bodily identification, that's the main cause. Mind causes us to desire in different ways. So, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he uses a word, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev. Now, Bhagyavan, what does it mean? Normally, we may feel that, especially those lotteries, you know, Jito, 5 lakh, whatever, be Bhagyavan. Now people really feel, yes, you know, I'm not so fortunate that I can win 25 lakhs, 40 lakhs. Of course, it's gambling and it is bad, it is not good for us. That's a different point altogether. But why do we associate bhagya only with getting some material resources? Because that's the only idea we have of bhagyavan. So, let us try to see this first, then we'll go to this Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor. Brahmanda Brahmite, this living entity has to wander like a traveling salesman. He has no rest. He just has to go from one place to another, continuously. Now, there are people, there is an English word called wanderlust. Not much to do with mundane lust, but wanderlust means some people just like to travel. They travel, they write books about their travel, they produce videos. So, oh, I went to this place, I went to that place. And some like to see their travel, armchair traveling. Or you read a book about somebody's travels. Now, however hard somebody may try to convince you that, you know, get out of Bombay, it's vacation time, come to Ooty, come to Kashmir, come to some national park, come to the ocean, come to Bermuda. You know, traveling makes you, you know, your mind becomes open and it's good for you, good for your health. But it is not true that we always like to travel. So on one point we are being told to travel, travel, travel. And then there are some people who say, there is nothing like homecoming, huh? That feeling you get when you actually come home. Oh, wonderful. And that is what the Bhagavatam also hints at. What is spiritual life? What is back home? Back to Godhead. Why Prabhupada used that? Because actually there is nothing like homecoming. Home food, home ambience, home atmosphere, home people. The Bhagavatam says, Pantha Sva Sharanam Yatha. Pantha, the pathik, the pilgrim, the traveler. What exactly do you mean by getting back home?
What do you mean by getting liberated? That feeling when you say, oh, like sometimes, you know, when we are stranded, the train is 6 hours late, you're supposed to reach Bombay Central at 6 o'clock in the morning, it is 12 o'clock and you're still at Borivali, and you're saying, oh, only 2 more hours and I'm in my home. Your mind already goes there, you're taking a shower, sitting in your favorite place. Now, although you might be visiting places which you might be frequently visiting, but the fact is that this is not my home. Very comfortable place, nice dwelling, good food, good people. Not home. It's not my home. My home means I am with my people. So, Prahlad Maharaj talks of materialistic demons as Grihavratta. They take this material world as their home and then they take their vrata. I won't leave this place. Come what may. Now if somebody has taken this vrata, I won't leave. What kind of material tribulation will kick him out? Nothing. He is just going to adjust. In our Niti Shastra, there is this example of a man having four sons-in-law. Now, four son-in-laws is quite something. And in Diwali, you know, they all come at their father-in-law's place. Everybody expecting presents, good treatment, good food. So Diwali is over. 10 days after Diwali is over, still all four are happily eating every day, three times, giving no signs of leaving his home. So the father and mother-in-laws are already discussing as to what do we do with these fellows, uncouth, completely uncivilized. So one day they say, we'll not call them for lunch today. Anyway, they come anyway. So the first fellow says, this is an insult. I can't bear this, you know. Not being invited, he leaves. The other three say, so what? At least they are serving us. Lunch is served, what's the problem? They all sit for lunch. After a week, he says, we'll not offer them water, because traditional Vedic hospitality, when somebody comes as a guest, offer him water to wash his hands, feet, mouth, offer a place to sit. Don't offer them any of that. So the second one says, well, not calling for lunch is one thing, but not giving this thing is too much. I'm leaving. Only two remain. After the third week, the father-in-law decides, don't serve them hot food. Whatever we cook in the morning, we'll give them that. The third fellow says, this is too much. I am habituated to eating good hot food. And this is the third insult, so I can't bear it any longer. But the fourth one is such a determined character that he says, as long as I am getting food, I am not leaving. So after 5 full weeks, the father-in-law comes with a stick and is about to give him the first whack on his head. He runs away. He says, why don't you tell me that I have to leave this place? What more indication do you want? So, there are various categories of people, and the most intelligent are those, they see this world around, they see what happens to everybody, and then they say, understood, this place is not for us. Like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, his favorite saying was, this place is not fit for a gentleman. That means those who want to stay here, you can understand what kind of people want to stay here. He said, this place is not fit for gentlemen. Sometimes he would say, this place is like your bathroom facility. Go inside, do your job and get out. So, why does someone make this decision, I have to stay here? The Shastras say, because of impure mind, because the mind is affected. And why can't he get cured? Because of the impure mind. Like somebody is admitted to the lunatic asylum, mental hospital. Why is he admitted? Because he is mad. Why doesn't he take medicine? Because he is mad. So what's the way out? Should we condemn him all the time to be mad? Well, we are all like that. We become mad because of our own problems. And we remain mad, especially because of us. So some intervention is required. And that is called Guru Krishna Prasad. So only a Bhagyavan Jeev, he will decide. Like some people feel that sense gratification, here is good, there is bad. But unless we are convinced, at least with our intellect, that it's the same everywhere, there is absolutely no difference. Even in the planets of the demigods, what to speak of these places here, there is still the same envy, competition, ill feelings. They don't leave you at all. So, in that purport in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada gives an example. Bhagyavan means like Narad Muni. Starting from 21st of July is the Chaturmasa Vrat. 4 months of specific period for doing some austerities. Of course, Srila Prabhupada never performed them himself or never emphasized. But at least, whatever way we can do something additional, it's always good. So the least he prescribed ISKCON devotees is you don't accept in your diet at least the 4 things which are meant for every specific month. Beginning we start with leafy vegetables. Fast from leafy vegetables for 1 month, don't accept them. Then curd, then milk, and then urad dal. And the reasoning behind these 4 items is not something very mystic or intricate. These Chaturmas Vrat would be recommended for sadhus, traveling merchants, kings. So, rainy season traveling is bad. Now, we are not convinced, we still go. But then when suddenly the train stops, we understand, oh, actually, we should not be traveling in these 4 months. But now with life becomes so hectic, we can't afford to. But at that time, people knew that business, commerce, military activities, only 8 months of the year. 4 months, you just sit down in a place and do some bhajan, read something, do your agricultural activities, be peaceful. So merchants also would know that the risk of carrying everything from one place to another. So they would sit. Such a setting, Narad Muni is in that particular incident, he was born as the son of a maid servant. Just some housemaid, Dasi. But she was a pious lady. And she would serve such pure devotees who had decided to not travel during that time. Just by fortune, just by luck. And Narada, when he saw those, Prabhupada calls them the Bhakti Vedantas, those who are very knowledgeable and also advanced in devotional service, he would serve them their food, and they would, what food they would accept in Chaturmas, very simple. They would eat that, he would collect those leaf plates, throw them away, clean the place. And once, just once, Narada seeing that when some exalted person accepts food, it is your right to ask him for some remnants. So he asked them, can I take a little bit? And seeing this innocent request from this small boy, they also felt happy. I mean, it's not like the devotee feels, bring me something and then I'll leave some remnants for you. No, not in that mood. But they allowed him. Once he ate that, and all his previous karma was burnt to ashes. Now that doesn't make a sound as it burns. It is not seen as it is burnt. But it just happens. And we have to understand that what is the proof that somebody is liberated? immediately the chance to serve Lord Krishna and his devotees appears before us. That's the only criterion we have. What do you mean I am liberated? Well, you have a chance to serve Lord Krishna, you have a chance to serve the devotees. Because mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena jas sevate sa gunan samatityaitan. Unless all the gunas, three gunas, are completely crossed over, sama atitya, not just atitya, sama atitya, completely, the opportunity to serve the Lord or devotees just cannot come. Now, of course, there is always a chance that using our independence, we can again go to some conditioned activities. And that was the reason why Prabhupada said, all my temples exist in Vaikuntha. Once one comes to devotional service, he has a chance to become liberated. Liberation in Krishna consciousness. So, this is one very poignant example of how somebody can become Bhagyavan. And we can see the result in our lives today. We may feel, why people are not interested in bhakti? Why people are not interested in devotional service? Not because they don't know what bhakti is. But typically, Kali Yuga population is of those that kind who are mainly interested in sense gratification. In fact, they are more averse. It is not just no knowledge. It is averse. It is resistance to bhakti. That is a sign of Kali Yuga. So what is our intervention? Lord Chaitanya says, Guru Krishna Prasad. Krishna sees this person is sincerely trying to do something. He wants to come to me. How does Krishna know that we want to come to him? It can be even a small thought. There are devotees who had prayed to Krishna. They never knew that Krishna is God. Like one devotee, he was studying architecture in California. Got fed up with his studies. Said, I'm going to Europe. See, Americans, when they're frustrated, they go to Europe. Europeans, when frustrated, go to India. Indians, when frustrated, go to America. Everyone thinks that the other guy is very happy. So seeing the same kind of... Now, California is supposed to be very beautiful, isn't it? With rolling hills and a nice salubrious climate. But they want some tougher climate to make them tough. And people in tough climate want something mellow to be happy. Just the way it is. Your situation doesn't make you happy. Somebody else's does. So he was wandering in southern Europe. Mostly communist countries, Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, like that. And after wandering through so many forests and seeing rivers and streams and mountains and meeting all kinds of wonderful, friendly people, we come to know that people are the same everywhere. Give and take a little bit here and there. And this person was staying in a youth hostel, cheap budget rooms. But that night, this thought came over and over. I gave up my profession, I gave up everything, because I want to do something about God. Oh God, please, help me, reveal yourself to me. I don't know what I'm going to do once you reveal yourself to me, but at least this genuine thing is there in my mind. And early morning, you should know, 4 o'clock, he was woken up by what else? Mangal Aarti. There were 4 traveling book distributors in the next room. And diligently, they have to perform Mangal Aarti wherever they are. So, and of course, they were not doing very softly. So, by that din, he got up, rubbed his eyes, came in that room and was thinking, you know, what is to be done? What is this? The performance was over. He asked them. They gave him a book. He joined the Hare Krishna movement later. So, that simple request, just like there are so many hippie festivals in America, there is one in the UK called the Glastonbury Festival. Just got over last week. Our devotees regularly go there. So one boy who was always thinking of going through different camps and just experimenting, testing what people have to offer. Suddenly he heard the he came to know the word self-realization. And he said, this is something I have always wondered. Nobody has taught me what exactly it is, but... And then that one night he was praying that, oh God, please let me know what is self-realization. I have seen what is channeling, what is tarot, what is chakras, healing, and so many things. Whatever the new age supermarket has to offer, he has seen that. But self-realization was something which he had never understood. And the very first person he sees in the morning is a devotee book distributor with the book, Science of Self-Realization. And he says, this is it. This is what I wanted. So, it is not that in Kali Yuga, Krishna doesn't listen, but nobody or very rarely people ask. So those who have actually asked, those who receive should understand that actually I must have asked sometime. Then it is the job of the guru to fortify, to solidify your attachment to Krishna. We don't know who Krishna is. We might have prayed to God. We always say, oh God, my God, but we didn't mean my Krishna, of course. You say, oh, what an accident, my God. Oh. So that is all an exclamation mark. But the guru, he actually tells you, God should be understood like this. Now do this, now do that. And that is the actual process of understanding Krishna. So it is Krishna who, remaining in the background, gives you your guru. And guru afterwards remains in the background, gives you Krishna. There's a constant struggle between both of them to remain in the background. Because nobody wants to take that control. There is no question of control in spiritual life. Everything goes by love. And love is a much more stronger rope than just formal controls. So therefore, since the mind can be the cause of our prolonging our stay in this world, the mind simultaneously is the cause of liberation. This is a unique thing which only this Bhagavata school offers. Everybody else outside, the Buddhists say, kill your mind. There's only one chance. Try to find your mind where it is. That is the difficult thing. And when you find it, kill it. So they do all kind of weird, strange, from normal point of view, meditations. Like meditate on the sound of a one hand clapping. You may say, how exactly? Try. It's not so easy. 16 hours, 18 hours every day. First of all, it's like trying to find the mind. Like in the rainy season, those crickets, when they make sound, the sound is not that irritating as when you can't find where that blasted insect lies, you know. That's more frustrating. So, how do you destroy the mind? And the mind can't be destroyed. It is subtle energy. But at least it is, they try to squelch it, make it zero. But the Bhagavata school says, don't try to... We have enmity or we have opposition with nothing in this world. A very nice saying somebody sent me. There are no strangers, only friends we have never met. Now, karmi people, poets and novelists like to write such kind of things. But actually it's a fact. Even in the spiritual quest, there are no strangers. There are only friends we have never met. Nothing is bad. Something which we have not been told how to use it. So, Krishna consciousness, the very first understanding is, everything comes from Krishna. And Krishna is all good. So then how can be anything bad there? But we see actually something bad. That bad is the use of it in the service of someone who is not Krishna. The only bad is the opportunity or the urge to use Krishna's resources in the service of someone else. Can be you, yourself, your family, your nation, community, whatever. So Maharaj Ambarish is quoted here, Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindayor. He utilized his mind in thinking about the lotus feet of Krishna. We have Krishna here. Krishna has his beautiful lotus feet and devotee tries to imagine them. Why are they called lotus feet? Acharyas give different nice explanations. A lotus stays in water but is above the water. Lotus grows from mud but doesn't take any influence from the mud. So Krishna's lotus feet, as seen in this material world, Krishna seems to be born in a prison house in Mathura, but he is not a mundane creature. He always remains above. Then Ambarish Maharaj, such a nice list of what Ambarish Maharaj did. He used his words to always glorify Krishna. His hands in cleansing, personally cleansing the temple of Krishna. Now Ambarish Maharaj had a big temple, or he supported millions of temples in his kingdom. But there was one temple where there was only one Sevait, he himself. No servant would be allowed. He would do everything himself. His ears in hearing about Krishna. His eyes for three things. Seeing the deity of Krishna, seeing the temple of Krishna, seeing the dham of Krishna. Touch, the sense of touch, in touching the bodies of Krishna's devotees, especially during Sankirtan, you get the opportunity to now the touch of a devotee's body should not be seen as mundane or material. In fact, a few Sundays ago, Dwarkarish Prabhu was relating the pastime of how the Rath Yatra was going on and Shivas Thakur was standing and was just trying to fill the vision of Lord Chaitanya dancing in the Jagannath Rath Yatra with just two eyes. And just behind him was Maharaj Pratap Rudra. He was not knowing that this is such an elevated person, but he was knowing that everybody who has come from Gaudadesh is a very respectable person. But seeing Srivas move forward back like that, trying to see, Hari Chandan, one of Pratap Rudra's servants, assistants, he thought that, what is this person doing, you know? My Maharaj wants to see properly, and this person is coming in middle. So two, three times he tried to tell him that, you know, do like this, do like this. So Srivas Thakur, in that ecstasy, not out of spite or out of malice, he just turned back and gave a sounding, resounding slap. And as if nothing has happened, again started singing. And Hari Chandan was shocked. He said, ah. And Maharaj said, wait. You are very fortunate. This personality has slapped you. Do you know what it means for you? Don't underestimate the touch of such an exalted Vaishnav. So of course, normally people would prefer, you know, a pat on the back, or that's what Krishna, that's what Prabhupada would do. In fact, there are some nice clips when Prabhupada would give initiation. One devotee calls forward, he gives him his beads, and then he touches his shikha. And you can see the devotee's face so, you know, blossomed. So of course, that thing is there in a Vaishnava's touch. Then his sense of smell, in smelling Tulsi leaves, the fragrance of Tulsi leaves which is offered to Krishna. The tongue, of course, in prasad seva. The legs in walking across the dham. Just imagine, you walk across the dham and you are getting tons and tons of pious activities, pious credits. Head in bowing down, and his desires in 24 hours of the day, just trying to serve Krishna. So, that is one way in which such a exalted person, like the king, like the emperor of the whole universe, he is showing by his example. Now, it doesn't mean that he had no problems in his empire. There were no dacoits. Everybody was very peaceful, calm. They were all paying their taxes. No, a king means this responsibility is always there. By fulfilling all these responsibilities, and not of one small corporation or some head office or some village, entire world. I don't think now even if one person decides to rule the world, he will accept that heavy responsibility. Like, there are corporations who want to rule the world, that's a different thing. But whether they will be able to is a completely different matter. The last person to try and succeed a little bit was Alexander. But his problem was, he went from this side, went around the globe, conquered everything, started losing the previous one after 2 months. So just imagine, he in a straight line, he conquered every country in the globe. But the previous one which he had just left to his generals, they lost it. So finally he just wanted, I'm so frustrated. Who gave me this ambition? I don't know. I just want to go back home. Back home. He was from Greece. He wanted to go back home. He could not reach home. He died of malaria, I think, in Egypt. So, you may propose so many things, but ultimately your karma won't allow everything. But King Ambarish actually could do it. Why? Because of focusing all his desires in the lotus feet of Krishna. So, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions or comments? Yes. Microphone.
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much, Prabhu.
Thank you.
It's a silly question, but I love milk and milk products. So, Chaturmas is coming up. It's always during the third month, you know, my knees start trembling. So what do you tell a person like this?
Well, this is how a spiritual master adjusts the situation, seeing the specific condition of the disciple. So you can just ask your Guru Maharaj as to, I have a desire for doing Chaturmas. At the same time, I have this conditioning that I can't give up milk and milk products. I think once Srila Prabhupada gave the concession that for milk you can put a grain. It's not documented. It's one of those things which Prabhupada said. So, that's a fact. Our path is not of that variety where we take an austerity and raise it to the level of God consciousness. We always have to see that we don't become austerity consciousness. Austerity is a rail on which the train moves. It can't go above the train. It has to be always below it. And its job is to see that it moves properly forward. If somebody says, okay, if there is no rails, train won't move. If it is an above, also won't move. So that's the balancing factor. And of course, what to speak of milk products, there are so many other things which you might be liking. How you gave them up? Just because you understood that initiation from a bona fide spiritual master in ISKCON is something which I really have to have. So just like if you take a stock of those things which you really liking but you gave up, similarly these things also will follow that. It's not that some conditionings will come with us all the time. So therefore this adjustment is needed. And when one acts under the guidance of his teacher, that's the most important part. Just like in Ayurveda, sometimes a physician may say that, I'm giving you this and this will give you a fever. But we can tolerate that because it will cure your tumor. That's the main thing. So sometimes that adjustment is done. But it is never done on the whims of the patient. You can't read the book and say, okay, I'll you can't be your own doctor. So, if you wish to give away this conditioning, if you wish to conquer this, we Your Guru Maharaj will always give you some, whatever he says, oh, you don't need to do this. That's also fine. As Prabhupada in the beginning would tell his disciples, just eat. Eat a lot. And he would fill 6 chapatis, 7 chapatis, 2-3 sabjis, gulab jamuns. And after some time, Prabhupada said, you know, control yourself. And one devotee said, Swamiji, just 1 year ago, you were telling us to stuff ourselves, and suddenly now you are telling us to control. Prabhupada said, well, you didn't complain that time. So don't complain now. At that time you didn't complain, so why complain now? You're just supposed to follow, and it's always a fact. Some things which are told to us, we like them, so we do it. Guru Maharaj has told me. But actually it is my own heart, is in that. So similarly, those things which we don't like, we follow. That makes our mind in equanimity. So don't worry, it is not a very major thing. Any other question? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you just now prescribed about lamentation. What difference seriousness Arjuna having after Abhimanyu left, and what it teaches to us?
Okay.
After reading Bhagavad Gita and...
Arjuna's lamentation before understanding Bhagavad Gita was like any other conditioned souls, trying to see things for himself, making a decision without taking help from Krishna or Guru, and more importantly, further continuing this journey, this cycle. After hearing Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna of course is always liberated, but technically we can say that after, when he is telling Krishna that sitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanam tava, he says, I have lost nashto moha smutir labdhva tvat prasadat maya achyuta. By your mercy, O Achyuta, I have given up my lamentation, my doubts have gone, I am fixed in equanimity now, I will do as per your order. In that realm, in this realm of a liberated consciousness, that attachment for Abhimanyu was not my son. That attachment is for a devotee of Krishna. And that is never bad. When a devotee leaves, what Vaishnavas think? I lost the chance to do some service to him. He was such an inspiration, but I lost the chance to serve him. Contrast this in the material world, where I don't wish to sound hard or harsh, but normally the underlining motivation is, oh, my husband is dead, now who will look after me? Oh, this fellow is gone, now he is gone, what about me? You know, so much money was gone in hospitalization, not what I will do. So, for some time, it is, oh, he was a good fellow and nice, but now what? What do I do now? This is callous, this is selfish. A devotee is not like that. Our only lamentation is, oh, he is now, he got the result of all his devotional practices. And I know for certain, for my advancement, I need somebody advanced so that I can serve him, and then that's how Krishna will be pleased. I won't be advancing if I always maintain my own group of people whom I sort of act as a in advisory capacity. I need my own shelter. So that is how devotees lament. Even at the level of devotee like Narottam Das Thakur, he would always think that I need the shelter of Srinivas Acharya, Ramchandra Kaviraj. And that is the real emotion. Like we just saw the passing of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. And you see how his godbrothers are pouring in with their emotions. And all of them say the same thing. That, you know, we could have served you better. In fact, Ramanujacharya, he stayed for more than 125 years on this planet. And when he was leaving, most of his disciples were shedding tears. And he says, don't cry. I'm going to a very happy place now. It's I who should be crying. Why you are crying? Do you think that I'm being miserable? I will be bereft of your association. So, don't worry that, or don't cry for what will happen to me. So, devotees don't cry because, you know, somebody is leaving in a sense, this world is such a nice place and he will not be able to enjoy this anymore. Never. Oh, he built such a nice bungalow and now he can't stay there. How unfortunate. Oh, he had such a nice job. Oh, he was due for promotion. Oh, he just got this. Oh, he just got that. Everything based on material consciousness. We also see that now he has better opportunity to serve Krishna. That's what he wanted. He or she wanted all his life. Now he got that. But I should lament because I did not serve him or her properly. And in that, there is full scope for exhibiting your emotions. Srivas Thakur, his own son died. Now, of course, there was lamentation. But he told his family members, I know what has happened. But I value the service to my Lord more than anything else. So please, if any one of you wails a little bit louder, and if Lord Chaitanya stops his kirtan, that is going to be much more disturbing to me. I'll drown myself in the Ganga. So, even though a personal loss, not that he was hard-hearted, but at a personal loss, he was not willing to sacrifice service for that. And what is the result of such a love? Lord Chaitanya says, how in the world can I leave such associates? So it is not true that only devotees think of loving God. Krishna reciprocates with millionfold. And then that attachment grows thicker and thicker and thicker. So meeting with devotees or separation from devotees, it is just like that, thing how women make their hair veiny. Like a band. The more opportunities for that, the thing becomes thicker and thicker and thicker. And that's how Vaishnavas, they live their life. So there is the fullest scope for emotions when you start prosecuting devotional service. Yes, last question.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, thank you for such a nice class. In these verses, we are seeing how powerful the mind is, as you explained today. Before coming to Krishna consciousness, we knew that we had mind. And after so many years have passed, now we are realizing what is real power of mind. So this mind really agitates us. It creates problem, envy, so on and so forth. So, and this happens in a devotee circle or in congregation, as we have limited ourselves to our congregation or devotee circle. So can this be taken as a positive indication that we are progressing in right path and that's why mind is troubling us more?
Well, the question is that now that our mind is troubling us, that means I'm advancing. See, just like this. I have seen myself, typical street drunkards. One of, in our colony itself, somebody had left his flat and a new family had come in. Unfortunately, one of the sons had a habit of drinking. And one day he came punch drunk. He couldn't walk properly. He was just, catching a electric pole just near our house, and people came to call the father that, your son is like this state. The father, two other brothers came, And one was so angry, he started slapping him hard. And I could see that with the sound of that beating. And this person was not showing any reaction. I was surprised as to how he can withstand this. So somebody enlightened me later that in that state, they don't feel the pain. Although the blows are coming, they don't feel the pain. So just see when his alcohol in his blood comes, slowly starts coming down, then he'll start groaning in pain. So, in completely conditioned life, Maya gives the same blows and mind gives the same kind of problems. But we just don't understand these are problems because there are no sensors which are alive. But when you come to devotional service, it is not that immediately you start getting a solution to all of your problems. But the first thing is that, like, the room is not clean, but the lights suddenly go on. And what happens in a dirty room when the lights are on? You only see dirt. In total darkness, you might think that maybe some corner is very clean. No. When everything is like big flashlights are put in, like many times devotees come to, like, they start chanting and they say, oh my God, you know, like one lady in our Gita course was saying, I get such angry thoughts when I'm chanting, only when I'm chanting. After I'm finished my chanting, I'm very peaceful. So I've stopped chanting. So Gopinath Prabhu said, no, don't do that. She says, but then I'll become a very violent person. She says, this is how that precipitate, that dark, thick conditioning which was at the bottom, once you start boiling a pot with some liquid in it, the boiling process will take everything to the surface. When it comes to the surface, don't start glorifying it. Take it out and throw it away. So, till the last bit of conditioning, like, you know, when you boil milk, if it has some additives, it comes to the fore. Especially when making ghee. You boil that, you make into curds, and then you clarify butter. When butter is being clarified, all the impurities have to come to the fore. So then you carefully filter them. So it's not that you see something and you feel so dejected. Oh, my mind was having this kind of thing. Obviously. Gaur Govind Maharaj, in one example, he says, if somebody goes to the ocean, he's standing at the shore and he says, oh, look, there's a fish. There's a fish here also. He said, what has come to the bottom, you'll see millions of them. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, we feel, well, you know, my mind is fairly under control. I'm not that bad a person. Krishna says, okay, wait. If that's what you think, that your mind is not that bad, I'll show you how it is that bad. So, this is why our Goswamis, Jai Shri Radha Gopinath Ki, Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami says, don't take my name, you'll become sinful. Don't think about me, you will lose all pious credits. Now why somebody gets this kind of humility? Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, there cannot be any more sinful person than me. Now, this is not just poetic glorification. Like devotees sometimes say, oh, I'm very fallen. No, I'm very fallen. I'm more fallen. I insist I'm fallen. How dare you think you are fallen than me? No, not that childish kind of competitive mood. But actually they had this. So this is this, and they are representatives of the normal conditioned being. So that's what it is. That actually all this is there. So sometimes devotees understand one part of your mind should be alert that once I start this process, I'll be able to see what exactly was there before. And let it go. So it's part of the cleansing process. Okay. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Granthara Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki.